Veterans Affairs and Emergency Preparedness is now open. Welcome to the February 9th, 2017 committee. As is custom, on Thursdays, when we are focusing on veterans, we talk about the service of our fallen. Today we have two House concurrent resolutions to do that for Oregon folks. Thankfully, there have been no more military that fell this past week. But because we have this moment to guide attention, I want to read a little bit about Master Sergeant Cheryl Ann Tobin that I think warrants our time to kind of keep us focused on why veterans' issues are important. Master Sergeant Cheryl Ann Tobin, age 48, of Clarksville, Tennessee, passed away after a long struggle with cancer on December 31, 2016. But her story is actually one of inspiration. Master Sergeant Tobin served in the active duty Army and Army Reserves from 1986 to 2002, earning several awards and campaign ribbons. She continued her work as a civilian at the Fort Campbell Army Hospital until 2014. In 2016, however, despite fatigue that came from radiation, chemotherapy, and surgery that left her disfigured, she was able to climb the Vatican stairs on her knees and climb to the top of St. Peter's Basilica. The Vatican News Service commented that a former Master Sergeant with U.S. Army who used her military might and grit to meet the Pope and receive his embrace and blessing died in her sleep. It's a very important, I think, story sometimes to remember that the challenges of veterans are not just during the time of service, and they're not just to the fallen. There are veterans that carry those scars throughout their life. So, thank you for taking time to do that. We will move to an informational meeting, and I'm going to invite up some testimony. We're now in an informational meeting, and I invite Diana Otero to be our first panel to come on up and talk about the Klamath Falls Housing Authority. We're going to have two panels today, committee. The first panel is about how Klamath Falls has been using the document recording fee to do something very special for veterans down there. The second panel will be Rosie Macias and a guest talking about the Sound Vet Center. Please have a seat, and you have our attention. Please introduce yourself and state where you come from for the record.
Well, Chair Evans and members of the committee, thank you for inviting me. My name's Diana Otero. I'm the executive director at the Klamath Housing Authority. And if you've ever been to Klamath Falls, you know that we're very rural. And we had something pretty amazing happened in 2015 when the document recording fees were made available to do housing for veterans. My board, probably 6 years ago, had identified that housing for veterans was a huge need in Klamath County. Per capita, we have a pretty high percentage of veterans there. I think it's like 10%, which is pretty amazing. And so we felt like there was no housing dedicated strictly for veterans, and, you know, we're like everybody else, we're short of housing. So when the funds were made available, we applied. We were ready to go, and we put the application in, and we got funded. So we got together with all of the service organizations that work with veterans in Klamath County and really took a hard look at what the needs were. And what we identified is the Vietnam era veteran are some of the very hardest to house. Some of them have not been into treatment, have not dealt with their issues, and a lot of them are homeless or cyclically homeless. So we targeted our housing towards them. We developed housing that would be specific for them. And so we built, with $2 million, we built 10 one-bedroom units and a community room and a manager's unit. And we had this together pretty fast, and we built it in 6 months. And we had our grand opening in the pouring rain on October 27th. We had active military from the base there in Klamath Falls there. We had a lot of veterans organizations, and we had a lot of veterans who had watched this whole thing be built. The instant we opened our waiting list, at 6 o'clock in the morning, we had people lined out there to get on the waiting list. One lady, the lady at the very front door, was perched on her walker that she had used to walk there. I went out and talked with all of them. All of their stories are very heartwarming. But anyway, we did this grand opening on October 27th, and 3 days later, everybody moved in. We had 10 units. We have the average age of the population there is 62 years old. Half of them are disabled. We have eight single men. We have one couple that are both veterans, and we have one woman veteran. And we had hoped that this would bring them together and they would build a community, and it's succeeded beyond our wildest dreams. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to see the flyer, but we talked to some of the people when you invited me to come here. We went and talked to them to get a feel after 3 months. How do you like living there? How do you feel about this? And the gentleman that's at the top of this flyer, he is absolutely thrilled to live there. He came from a rat-infested place, and he said that we saved his life and that he will be there till he dies. We'll have to carry him out. I really hope so. And I think that we're going to find a large majority of the people that are there are probably going to be there for life. It's brand new housing. Not a lot of housing gets built in Klamath Falls, and so this is very exciting. And the whole community watched this happen. The whole community was behind us. The day of the grand opening, I had several people come and donate money to help buy furnishings for these people, because some of them came without beds or dishes or a couch to sit on. One gentleman had been homeless for 4 years, truly homeless. He had built a box in the back of his beat-up pickup, and that's where he had lived in New Pine Creek, Oregon, for 4 years. And he told Angie the day that she gave him the key, he said the first thing he was going to do was take a hot shower, because he'd been bathing in a cold water in a basin for the last 4 years. He hadn't had a hot shower in 4 years. So the funds that were made available were life-changing for these 10 people. I can't impress on you enough how exciting this is. This is you. I think you have a copy of this, and I showed you what the whole complex looks like, what an individual building looks like, and like the inside of a kitchen. And I know if I was single, I would be happy to live there. I think that our contractors, our designers, we did a really nice job. I would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, given what you earlier talked about the number of veterans that are in Klamath Falls. So how did you choose, or were people selected for this housing? Where did that, since it appears when you open, it's full.
Yeah. We actually, within 3 weeks, had three times the amount of people on the waiting list. And so what we did is we considered them on a first-come, first-served basis, and looked at a lot of intangible things like need. Were they homeless, and did they have some type of support system? If they were working with another agency, then we overlooked, you know, some of the criminal record and some of the poor rental history. Mm-hmm. I think that we arrived at 10 who really needed to be in decent housing. We have one gentleman who probably shouldn't live on his own. He's in very poor health, but he has no support system. And so all of his fellow tenants around him, they check up on him every day. They make sure he gets out of bed, he gets showered. They make sure that they get help him go get groceries or go get them for him if he's having an especially bad day. So it was. We looked at him on a first come, first serve, but then also looked at need.
Sure. Thank you.
Chair.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Just a quick question. I'm not familiar with the program and how it works. So my goal would that you would be able to keep this for a long time. What are the plans for maintaining it over time, and or where are your funds going to come from? Do you guys have funds to help turnovers for cleaning up, painting, et cetera, over
sure.
the years?
They pay rent. Most of the people living there have a VASH voucher.
Okay.
Are you familiar with a VASH voucher?
Yeah.
Or a regular voucher? There's a couple who have enough retirement income that they can pay rent, but the rents are very affordable. They're like $400.
Great.
And then Klamath Housing Authority funded a reserve account, and then every month we put so much per unit into that reserve account. So there will be money to redo everything. It should be very self-sustaining. There's no mortgage.
Fantastic. Yeah, that is good to hear.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Fiscal.
You bet. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is kind of what she had remarked about the Vietnam veterans is a classic example of the Vietnam veterans. Some of them, in fact, many of them went away from society.
Yes.
They were very disillusioned with their government, very disillusioned with the population. But now as the Vietnam veterans get older and they get into their 60s and 70s, now they're starting to come in and ask for help for medical and housing and is asking for help. And I'm very concerned that we're going to get a lot of people in that era into the VA system with PTSD because it hasn't been corrected. And as well as these kids coming out of Afghanistan and Iraq, and they're doing 4, 5, 6 tours, and we only did one tour, so mm-hmm. I'm very concerned that we're going to be overwhelmed.
I share that concern. And we are working very closely with all of the organizations, and we're providing referral services. They can come on site and use the community room to work with these people. I mean, unfortunately, I'm only touching a very small portion, but it's huge to these 10 people mm-hmm. that they get these services.
And good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So plans for the future. So when are you going to do another one of these projects?
As soon as there's money available,
okay.
I will be applying.
Thank you. That's what I was hoping you'd say.
And actually, that's my follow-up question to you. I, for those that may not know this, not only should Klamath Falls be applauded for what you did with this project, but Klamath County is one of the few counties in the state that actually is a part of your permanent rate in your county budget. Has a veterans program. It's
yes.
one of the few that led the way.
Yes.
And as we try to come up with recommendations to maximize and optimize the veterans dollars in the lottery that the voters have approved, programs like yours that can be leveraged
That's a great idea.
To make sure that we get veterans that once they're in the system are eligible for those housing vouchers that basically can, if not solve, at least take care of that group and then move on to another group and then move on to another group. It's one of those programs we want to highlight. So as you move forward and come up with plans, especially if it's leveraged with some of your other resources in the area, I suspect that those are the types of programs that might get first funding mm-hmm. because of the proven success, as well as you've already got a process in place to make that happen. The one question I do have is related to the domiciliary at White City.
Yes.
When you have, or at least as you're projecting forward, when you have folks that are past the point of being able to live by themselves, are you working with the domiciliary for planning for when that next stage maybe they can receive care there? Or?
Yes. It's only been open 3 months, so we're still
right.
forming those partnerships. But the gentleman who is our manager, our resident manager, is a volunteer driver that drives the van for the disabled veterans between the
Perfect.
Domiciliary
okay.
and Klamath Falls. So we've got some inns. We're working on those.
Small town connections. I like it.
It's amazing. <All right. laughs> And that's the one thing I did want to share with you is that this funding source was a small amount, and it's sometimes one of the only ways that housing in rural areas get built, because the mechanisms that build affordable housing don't work well in rural areas.
Right.
On a small scale, you don't get enough dollars, and,
right.
and we have a hard time attracting investors, things like that. So this was a miracle for us. Well, and not for me, but for the veterans we're housing. I just can't thank everybody enough for their forward thinking on this.
Well, you are commended for that effort, and we hope to be seeing more of you as you come up with the next phase ideas.
Well, and if you're ever in Klamath Falls, give me a shout and I'll take you on a tour.
All right. So, see no more questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. And Representative Benz was going to be coming in at 3:20.
Approximately.
Okay. Well, we're going to bring up the next panel in. We may ask to put you on pause just a little bit if we need to, but please come up. The next panel is going to be talking about vet centers, specifically the Salem Vet Center, as well as things going on around Marion County and community action agencies in this part of the state. And I'm going to ask you two to introduce yourself and take it away.
Good afternoon, Chair Evans, members of the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Rosie Macias, and I am the Veterans Outreach Coordinator for the Salem Veterans Center. I am here today to talk about services provided at the Salem Vet Center, as well as other agencies and the lack of resources in Marion County. For those that aren't familiar with the vet centers are community-based counseling centers that provide a wide range of social and psychological services, including professional readjustment counseling to veterans and their families. Vet center services do not require enrollment in the VIG VA system, like many people believe so. Eligibility is only based on service if the veterans service in a combat theater of operations, military sexual trauma while military orders, or loss of a family member who was serving in active duty. And that's also bereavement counseling. That's a new addition that we have since the war on terrorism started to happen. There are five vet centers in Oregon: Salem, Portland, Eugene, Grants Pass, and Bend. As a Veterans Outreach Coordinator, part of my job is to provide support to veterans and their families that are seeking counseling, housing, education, VA care, as well as to connect them with the local agencies and other veterans group in the county. In order to serve veterans well, I depend a lot on a lot of the agencies here locally, such as Mid-Willamette Valley Community Action Agency, serving our veterans at home, Community Network for Veterans, and of course, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. We spend a lot of time on the phone looking for ways to help our veterans when they do not qualify for certain services. But even with those amazing services and organizations working hard to improve the lives of American veterans, Marin County is still lacking a lot of essential resources for our veterans. The issues that I see right now is that there's not enough affordable supportive housing, not enough funding to help veterans assistant. Working with a lot of homeless veterans, a lot of things that we look for is they're needing gas to get to work, you know, vouchers. Also food services, they come to us with needing electricity pay or things like this. And a lot of the community services, there's just not enough funding, especially if those veterans do not qualify or meet their qualification for those particular agencies. One of the things that we're lacking is a county VSO for Marin County. I would love to see a county VSO that can actually focus on things like this. Right now, Marin County is the only county in Oregon that does not have a VSO. Of course, we have the ODVA, but that's in a bigger scale. It's really there for Oregon in general. With me today, I brought Sarah from Mid-Willamette Valley Community Action Agency, and she's actually able to give more stats on what veterans are needing. She's one of the organizations that I work closely with. We are always on the phone trying to tag team and help veterans. So at this time, if you have any questions, I'm willing to answer that. And how to do a little thing for the chair. I am a Marine. I was not going to say yes. I was kind of intimidated because there's so many Air Force.
She's not from the Air Force, though her heart wants to be.
My heart does not want to be. I'm very proud to be a Marine. So
for those on the committee, Rosie is, when she says outreach coordinator, there's nothing that goes on in the Mid-Willamette Valley that she's not a part of. And one of the things that I think her testimony points to, and I hope if there are any questions that you feel free to ask, she especially is a bridge between traditional services and services that were created in the Vet Center because of a lack of consistent service during the Vietnam War. That's why the rules to get access are a little different, a little more lenient. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, for today's generation of warriors, because she is of a younger generation, she's networking and doing all kinds of things that are bringing vets together that wouldn't necessarily have been as successful maybe 20, 30 years ago. Runs, family events, things all over the place, that hikes, fishing trips. So, again, with this particular era where we have so few people actually serving, but the impact on those who do serve significant, vet centers are, again, one more tool in the toolkit that could be very helpful, but don't necessarily always have the resources to help the people as we could. So if there are any questions. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair. This is more of a statement or a question. Could we have an excellent veteran service officer in Clackamas County? So my question, a VSO, right? And my question is, what do we have to do to get a VSO in Marion County? Because it's very valuable to our vets there, and we have a lot of need, and I'm sure you have a lot of need and could use the additional help. So that would be one of my questions, is what can we do to...
Well, the Vet Center is a federal program. The VSO program, there are two types. There's the state, there's the federal, the state, and also the county. Marion County Commission would have to decide that they wanted to have a veteran service officer. Polk County Commission last year stood up a VSO program. For a long time, it was only two counties that didn't have one. Polk County actually now has one. Marion County has yet to be convinced, and we're hoping that those conversations can happen. And if you have any leverage with the county commissioners, that would be very helpful. The great question, and one of the questions that I hope will be continue to be asked throughout the time.
Thank you, Chair. That's a good place to start.
And just to Vet Center, which I didn't think I didn't cover, Vet Center, we are part of the VA. We are, fall under the umbrella of the VA. But it was created back in 1979 after the Vietnam War. Vietnam veterans did not feel that the VA was treating them well. So with the same funding but different umbrella, the vet centers were created. We're more at the home front of the VA. So we do groups counseling, individual, couples, and then again, they're full post-traumatic stress, military sexual trauma, anything that has to do with military services. Again, we do not have eligibility. You do not have to qualify, such as, you know, 180 days to be in the VA system. You just have to be a combat veteran or military sexual trauma to come see us. So the different qualifications between the big VA and then the vet centers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Who's filling the void now for the VSO that we don't have in
well,
the county?
Well, for us right now is that Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, you know, and the thing with that for us is that they're there to help the whole state. When you have a VSO, it's kind of like the vet center, it's more personable. So you can be there, you know that's who you're going to get. They're able to attend different outreach events, you know, either homeless event, and be the first person that when a veteran walks in can see with the VSOs right now, well, not the VSOs, with the ODVA. They have to be everywhere because they're not Marion County. They're right here, and people, a lot of veterans believe that they belong here, but they're for the state in general, so they have to travel everywhere and cannot be everywhere.
So, Sarah, if you'd like to provide some comments.
Yeah, so I think that the ODVA here in town gets used a lot for frontline VSO, and that's not really the intention. The intention of the ODVA really should be higher level claims when they need to be overturned or when they need to be fought for, when they get denied and they have to go back in for appeal. That's really the type of thing that the ODVA should be handling, that higher level. There has been conversation between the commissioners and myself. I was invited a couple months ago to speak to them, and the question was, why do we need one? And so we came back and we really dug into it and had a discussion about why. And I think the consensus was, we need somebody that's going to do that in the community, you know, at the vet center, at Community Action Agency, with the veterans. A lot of these vets aren't going to go to the ODVA. They're not going to walk into the VA. They need to be met in community organizations, on the streets. You know, we always tease, you know, we need someone that's going to be able to get their shoes dirty, go out to the UGM, help these people file their claims so that we can get them their services so that they can get housed, so they can get mental health treatment and that sort of thing. And then once those things get denied, which they often do the first time, the ODVA can handle the appeal. And that's really the way it's handled in most counties. And I think that we have been able to overlook that because the ODVA is here in town. But that's really not their purpose, and that's not what we should be using them for. They shouldn't be frontline. They should be backup. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay.
Other things you'd like to add on any subject?
So Rosie and I partner a lot. She mentioned that. One thing that we do together is the Community Network for Veterans. It's fairly new within the last year. It is a group that has come together, and I don't know if you guys can see what I uploaded, but it's a community partnership. We've got Marion County Sheriff and DPSST and National Guard and all the veteran agencies. We've got everybody at the table having a conversation around veteran issues are not a VA problem. Veteran issues are community problem. If there are veterans on the street not being fed, not being housed, not getting mental health treatment, it doesn't affect the VA. It affects the entire community. And so the entire community really needs to come to the table to fix it. And so our mission has been to get not just the VA and the Vet Center and the VFWs to the table, but really get everybody to the table. Law enforcement has been incredibly involved. DPSST has been incredibly involved in coming to the table and really troubleshooting what the issues are and how we can fix them. I am a case manager for Community Action Agency. I hold the OHA RAP grant, which is through Oregon Health Authority. And it's for homeless veterans or veterans who are at imminent risk of becoming homeless with a severe mental illness. So my entire caseload are veterans with a mental illness that get in their way is how we essentially define it. They can't just have a diagnosis. We have to be able to prove that it's getting in their way of living and being housed. And so by bringing that population in off the street, and it's fairly new, we're in our second quarter, we're really seeing that there's this huge lack of mental health services. There's this huge lack of support for them, which is, you know, things like VSOs, supportive housing. These vets, I can house them and we can pay their rent for a year, but I can't then turn them back. They don't have the money, or if they do, they don't have the knowledge or the ability to then go on and be successful on their own. They're going to need long-term supportive housing. They're going to need long-term stability in vouchers. This population's not going to be self-sufficient, not on my caseload. We do also hold the SSVF grant for Marion and Polk County. And we just created a coordinated entry system. So that's in its infancy, but we're getting really good statistics. The slides that you guys have, do you guys have the slides?
Mm-hmm.
So we've been screening. We have three people that go out on the street and screen the homeless vets. We started in October 1 really collecting data. And if you look down, just since October 1, we've done 93 households. We've really identified that 34% really need permanent supportive housing, long-term, forever, not on their own. They're mentally ill, they're handicapped, they have disabilities, they're not going to be able to be on their own, and 34% is a pretty high percentage. 58% are literally chronically homeless. They have been, or I'm sorry, 62%. They've been on the streets four or more times or more than a year. Only 2.2% is diversion, which we really count as people that were working, lost their jobs, and they really could be diverted to like a one-time grant, and then they could, you know, move on. Of all that, 37% identified as having a serious mental illness. I mean, that's just huge. And I think that really speaks to the fact that we need county VSOs. We need better mental health. We don't have enough mental health in Marion County for anyone, let alone veterans. Veterans especially are struggling because they don't want to use the VA. They just don't, a lot of them. And even if they do, there's huge waiting lists. There's a two-year waiting list to get primary care at the VA right now here in town. That's just not acceptable. The VA is a much larger problem, but if we can get things like mental health and partner with local mental health, county mental health, state mental health, and get resources there, whether it's an identified person directly at PCC or directly at county mental health that we can call and get instant assessments. A lot of these people haven't been diagnosed. I can't pick them up on my caseload unless they've been diagnosed and we've done a full assessment on them. We don't have mental health in-house, so I have to reach out to the community, and we don't have enough people to do that. I'm being told, well, I can get them in 6 weeks, so it's hard to tell my vets, well, you have to wait 6 weeks even to get a diagnosis before I can even meet with you.
Okay.
And that's if we could find housing.
Right.
So that's partly why we teamed up, because we're really seeing that these larger issues are creating these systemic failures.
So Sarah Webb from the Community Action Agency, Rosie Macia from the Salem Vet Center. Any questions for our guests? If you do have questions or want specific follow-up, highly recommend both. The Community Action Agency in Marion County, great organization. If you want specifics about how their sister organizations throughout the state are working, Ryan, I know, is floating back between the hearings going on, because we have two hearings with this, roughly the same subject. And especially on the vet center, if you haven't ever been to a vet center, you should talk to Rosie and see what they have there. It's actually a pretty special place. Thank you both for coming today. I appreciate taking time out of your busy schedule to come in and share with us what's going on. And for sure, we will be involving you in some of the discussions as we move forward on how we can optimize those scarce lottery dollars to try to help the most vets. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to be here.
All right, we are going to be closing the informational meeting, and we're going to be opening a public hearing on resolutions HCR 6 and HCR 7. Representative Bentz, I understand you want to speak to both of them. SMS. You could please read the bill SMS.
Yes.
Then we'll ask Representative Bentz to testify to both, since we have the public hearings both open.
House Concurrent Resolution 6 recognizes and honors Lance Corporal Dale G. Peterson, United States Marine Corps, who was killed in action on April 23, 2007, while on patrol in Fallujah, Anbar Province, Iraq. Lance Corporal Peterson was born to Greg and Dorothy Peterson on September 7, 1986 in Bend, Oregon. He was raised in Burns, Oregon, and graduated from Redmond High School in 2005. Later that year, he enlisted in the United States Marine Corps. He was an academic honor graduate of the Basic Combat Engineer course, where he earned the Rifle Expert Badge. In 2006, he married Regina Reiser, who also later enlisted in the Marine Corps. Lance Corporal Peterson was a combat engineer and was attached to the 2nd Battalion, 6th Marine Regiment during the Operation Iraqi Freedom. In March 2007, he deployed to Iraq. On April 23, 2007, he was killed in action when an improvised explosive device struck his vehicle while his squadron was on patrol in Fallujah, Iraq. Lance Corporal Peterson loved several activities, including hunting, fishing, working on old cars, and being an outdoors person. Lance Corporal Peterson is survived by his wife, Regina Peterson, his mother, Dorothy Peterson, his father, Greg Peterson, and three sisters, Melissa Davies, Marcy Solins, and Mandy Peterson. Should we do both at the same time?
Actually, Representative, do you want to speak one at a time? Is that what you prefer?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Cliff Bentz, District 60. Thank you so much for hearing HCR 6. I'm joined today by Corporal Peterson's sister, Melissa Davies.
Thank you.
The resolution that you just heard summarized the salient facts, and of course we're here to honor him and his family. I think these efforts are incredibly valuable, and I really appreciate the committee's taking the time to hear this and also to hear from Melissa, who will say a few words about her brother.
Thank you. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me this time today. My name is Melissa Davies. I live in Dallas, Oregon, and I'm here speaking on behalf of Lance Corporal Darrell Peterson's family, all of whom reside in Oregon. His parents, Greg and Dorothy, his sisters, Marcy, myself, and Mandy, as well as his nieces, Amelia, Olivia, Luella, and Sophia, and his one nephew, Dalton. The Iraq War that started in 2003 is the war of my siblings and my generation. It is the war that knocked on our front door and made us a Gold Star family. To talk about Dale on a personal level really starts with talking about growing up with him. I like to joke that the greatest blessing my parents gave him were us three sisters. And he would only contend that a little bit with a laugh or a signature smirk. There were only 7 years between the four of us kids, so we had built-in friends and entertained ourselves quite a bit. Dale spent countless hours outdoors, as much time as possible up in the mountains, scouting, hunting, fishing, and much of that was alongside our dad. And typically he came home after that to, relatively exhausted, but to a good home-cooked meal from my mom. Dale lived in a really bold manner and without hesitation. It was part of his character. He was either all in or all out. His moral compass was evident at a very young age. It showed often as he stood up for others as they experienced adversity. He wanted to protect. He wanted to take care of. This empathy and hindsight really drove his desire to take care of others, and it translated, this lighter side really was paired with a desire and a motivation and intensity that made him a great Marine. As you heard, Dale enlisted in the Marine Corps in 2005. He did graduate from the Basic Combat Engineer course with academic honors, was an expert marksman, and his physical fitness was top notch as well. Again, he's either all in or all out, and with his Marine service, he was all in. Dale's characteristics and abilities made him a natural leader, and he had a quiet resilience that people tended to follow. Dale deployed to theater in March of 2007. He was there a short time. It's our understanding that while on mission in support of an Iraqi unit, working to find and dismantle a bomb maker, his convoy started taking RPG fire. As his Humvee navigated
a defensive position, they struck an IED. The explosion killed him, and it also mortally wounded one of his closest friends, Lance Corporal Jonathan Kirk. When Dale signed up for the Marines, he knew he was signing up to go to war. In that act alone, it was courageous. The reason why he was chosen to go on the mission he went on that night was because he was loyal, dependable, and he was known to act with valor, regardless of what he was being faced with. And that's what he did. Given his ultimate sacrifice, we ask this resolution passed to the House floor with a do adopt motion, allowing for a highway memorial in Central Oregon. I'd like to thank Representative Bentz for sponsoring this resolution and for the committee's time and opportunity to testify. If you have any questions, I'd love to answer them.
I don't think we have any questions, but thank you very much for coming and sharing about your brother and about his courage and his service. At this time, we'll invite anybody else who would like to speak in favor of the motion as well, if that's acceptable. Is there anybody who didn't have a chance to sign up but would like to speak to this measure versus HCR 7? Okay. Representative Bentz, would you?
No, just to thank you again for taking the time to hear this, and certainly a deserving family.
Thank you. Again, thank you very much. We will try to do, after we do the business of passing, we'll try to coordinate when it will be read on the floor and make sure that the sign gets up as soon as we can get it up.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bentz, did you also want to talk?
Yes.
As soon as I sit down. Okay, we're going to ask staff to read the SMS.
Please.
House Concurrent Resolution 7 recognizes and honors Oregon National Guard Sergeant David M. Johnson DeFord, 1967 to 2004, for service to his country. Sergeant Johnson DeFord was born in January of 1967 in Portland, Oregon, to Michelle DeFord and Rick Johnson. He grew up in Colton, Oregon, and graduated from Colton High School in 1985. Sergeant Johnson DeFord joined the United States Army from 1987 to 1991 before returning to civilian life. Sergeant Johnson DeFord pursued his passion for motorcycles, becoming an amateur racer. After the September 11, 2001 terrorist attack, Sergeant Johnson DeFord enlisted in the Oregon National Guard. He trained as a cook but retrained as a gunner and served in Iraq with the 2nd Battalion, 162nd Infantry Regiment. He was killed in action on September 24, 2004, when an improvised explosive device detonated near his Humvee, the last of a 14-vehicle supply convoy on a road northwest of Baghdad. At the funeral for Sergeant Johnson DeFord, former Governor Ted Kulikowski stated that the sergeant personified the spirit of the state. House Concurrent Resolution 7 honors Sergeant Johnson DeFord and his family for the sacrifice during the war in Iraq.
Representative?
Mr. Chair, again, for the record, Cliff Vance, District 60. Of course, we're here today in support of HCR 7, honoring Sergeant David Wayne Johnson DeFord. I'm joined by the sergeant's mother, Michelle DeFord, and his brother, Randall Johnson. And, of course, these situations are incredibly difficult for family members. And it's sad in a sense that we have to do both on the same day, but I'm very, very happy that we're doing them. And so thank you so much for hearing this resolution. And with that, Mr. Ford would like to say a few words.
Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to thank you for allowing us to testify today. And I just wanted to say a few words about David and his life and growing up in a small town, where he actually learned at a very young age about service to others. And I've always felt that he did a great job just in the little things that count, the day-to-day things of just being helpful and being cheerful and kind. He had his problems, but He was always the first to come home and help out when there was some kind of a problem going on. He had been in the military right after high school. And when his 4 years had been completed, he went back into the Guard after 9/11. And he was honestly worried about the different places in Oregon that should we ever be under attack. After 9/11, we were all in shock and reeling and didn't really understand what was going on and where we were going and what we had to really be afraid of. And his concerns were the mustard gas up in the gorge and the Bonneville Dam and different things like that. And he had a lot of friends in the Guard, so he went back in, and they were really looking forward to his returning to his cooking duties because cooking was a lifelong passion of his and he loved it. But he was retrained as a gunner, and he knew his life was going to be, he was doing a dangerous job, he knew that, and he accepted it. And according to all of his buddies, he was always boosting everybody else's spirits and laughing and joking. He was quite the prankster. And we believe he really had unbelievable courage. He, looking back on a lot of situations in our life, he was just courageous, sometimes way more courageous than we were. In my husband's words, he said, David's actions epitomize the true spirit and commitment to Oregonians. And we feel like it would be wonderful for the small town of Colton, who travel our highways, to always have this constant reminder that we send our loved ones to war and they don't always come home. And my younger son, Randy, he and his family still live in the Colton area. And he would be honored to share David's story with young people coming up. David, or Randy, is very active in veterans affairs and things and is a veteran himself. And so we really feel strongly about this. It would mean the world to us and to the community. So thank you. And
thank you very much for sharing. If you could just, for the record, restate your name.
Yes, my name is Michelle DeFord. And I live in Sumter, Oregon. That's why I approached Representative Bentz, because I'm one of his constituents.
Well, we're glad
Baker
you did.
Baker County.
We're glad you did. Thank you. And sir, would you like to speak?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my mother's covered it all pretty well. I just want to say that, you know, or I guess maybe briefly real quick.
If you could state your name for the record.
Sure. Randy Johnson. Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair. I'm just struck. My only thought that I'd like to add to my mother's comments were, I can't help but think of the fact that my brother volunteered. In the spirit of volunteering, I know our family values that. And he even volunteered that day to be on that mission. He was a little-known fact, and it was never published in the media at all. But he didn't have to be there that day. He had a teammate that couldn't be there, and he didn't want his lieutenant to have to pick a replacement because that vehicle was the last in the convoy. And if you follow IEDs and you followed the war on terror, you know that the front vehicle and the last vehicle are the worst place to be. And they've been getting hit every few days with a roadside bomb for weeks and months before this. And he volunteered to be in that last vehicle that day. And that came at a cost, obviously. And I'm just struck by that today and many times in the past, that wasn't enough to just volunteer and be there. You know, he was also there in the convoy that day, and he didn't have to be there. And we're proud of that spirit. And this roadside memorial really kind of honors and remembers that for a long time, you know, beyond one newspaper article, beyond a lot of other things. So we'd really appreciate that as a family, the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bentz?
No, only to say thank you again for hearing this resolution.
Absolutely. Thank you both. We're going to move to a work session in just a minute, but before we close the public hearing, is there anybody else that wanted to say anything about HCR 6 or 7? I believe Sergeant Major.
I speak on behalf of Sergeant Johnson also.
Okay, if you could. I think Representative Bentz is going to give you his chair. And for the record, if you could, Sergeant Major, please say who you are and what you do.
I am Jeffrey Elmiaki. I am the Operations Sergeant Major for the State of Oregon and our Directorate Society. I'd like to thank you, Chair Evans, and committee members for allowing this to happen today and to hear our words. As stated before, Sergeant Johnson was a member of 2162 Infantry Battalion in our southern Willamette Valley. It should be known that that battalion is known as the Volunteer Battalion, which, as you heard his family testify, he was nothing but a great volunteer and doing what he could. The words I want to share with you today is this. Sergeant Johnson epitomized the citizen soldier's attitude for unwavering commitment to a cause that was much greater than all of us. He stepped up, raised his hand, and swore his allegiance to a battalion initially he knew very little about. Whenever he was asked of him, he did. Whatever needed to be done, he did. As the testimony of his brother just said, he did. He didn't have to go, but he did. He did because it needed to be done. He accomplished every one of his tasks, every one of his missions. His crew members all spoke high of him. They spoke high of him even after that dreadful day in September when his life was over. He is such a true citizen soldier in support of one of our Oregon infantry battalions, and he served honorably and faithfully. Very quick notes, but I'd like to thank Representative Benz for sponsoring this resolution. And I'd like to thank all of you for listening to us today. It's a great honor to stand before you and speak of Sergeant Johnson, one of our fallen soldiers and Oregon Guardsmen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Any questions? I assume not. All right. If there's no other discussion about HCR 6 or 7, I'm going to close the public hearings on both. I'm going to open a work session on HCR 6 first and then 7, one at a time. HCR 6 work session is now open. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move HCR 6 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation.
Representative Esquivel has moved HCR to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay. Seeing no discussion, we will go to a roll call vote. Please call the roll.
Representative Lively.
Aye.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Post.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Excused.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Chair Evans.
Aye. Okay, having received a majority, HCR 6 passes with a due pass recommendation. And if it's acceptable to Representative Benz, would you like to carry the bill, sir?
Very much so, yes.
Okay, so Representative Benz will carry the bill. We're going to open a work session on HCR 7. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move HCR 7 to the floor with the due adopt recommendation.
Okay. Is there any discussion or objection to the motion? Representative Esquivel has moved HCR 7 to the floor with a do-adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion or questions? I see none. We'll move to a vote.
Representative Lively.
Aye.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Post.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Excused.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Chair Evans.
Aye. Seeing a unanimous vote, we are going to move HCR 7 to the floor. Representative Benz, would you?
Of course.
Okay. Before we move to the next item on the agenda, I just want to thank the families of both Dale and David. As a veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan myself, I can't say I fully understand, but I can certainly say that their memories make it possible for other people to believe that the mission continues, and that their example that will now be hopefully soon on the roadsides across Oregon will keep their legacy alive, and that their example is something that is critical for a generation that sometimes is searching for meaning. I think that both Dale and David, they did their part and an example for people to understand why courage is still needed in the 21st century. So thank you again for sharing your stories and sharing your family with the state of Oregon. And we look forward to the House motion and hopefully we'll have a chance to see you there as well. Is there any other business before the committee today? Okay, seeing no other business, I'm going to say that the February 9th, 2017 hearing of the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness is closed. I will see you on Tuesday.